You're listening to Spellbound. Welcome to episode 12 of Spellbound. I'm Julian Smith, and today's episode is brought to you by my favorite green tea on the planet. I'm not just saying this. The owners of this company are dear, dear friends of mine. I've known them for years, and I cannot stress enough how incredible their green tea is. Not just incredible for you, not just incredible tasting, but incredibly made. The level of detail, it's almost obscene. Golda green tea, 100% organic and pesticide-free. Golda's sencha leaves are cultivated from the finest soil in Japan and are handpicked by humans, not machines, which means less oxidation and more nutrients in your cup. Get free shipping on all orders until the end of April by visiting studioqla.com and using the promo code Spellbound at checkout. That's studioqla.com using promo code Spellbound. I'm joined today by Mr. Andrew Rader yet again. Welcome back, Andrew.
Thanks, Julian.
This is episode 12, and that means that nearly one-third of our episodes are with you.
Okay.
Actually, I guess that's
quarter.
A quarter. Yeah, yeah. A quarter. Because this is number three, so.
I can do math.
Don't ask me to calculate numbers. They will get messed up every time. And today we were going to talk about civilization, but we've decided to throw an audible and talk about Mars instead.
We're going to talk about civilization on Mars, maybe.
We're going to kill two birds with one stone. Andrew, you are an aerospace engineer. You have a PhD from MIT in long-duration spaceflight. You're doing some really cool stuff these days, and you've written a book on the possibility of leaving Earth. That's actually the title of the book, Leaving Earth. It's all about living on Mars, what it will be like. I couldn't put it down. I tore through it in one plane ride. It was a long plane ride. I was flying to Estonia, so I had like 17 hours.
Estonia's great.
There's a lot of talk about Mars right now. Everyone's talking about how we might have to leave planet Earth and go settle Mars. So I thought it would be interesting to hear your thoughts on that. And
yeah, I think that's one of the misconceptions. We'll all have to leave Earth and go to Mars. And I don't think anyone thinks that it's a good plan to send everyone to Mars or that everyone should go to Mars. I think that a small number of people would go at first. The eventual goal would be to establish a long-term civilization. Mars is the only place that we can get to with our current technology that we could actually build a civilization today. So it has natural resources there, and it has water and ice, and it has carbon dioxide, which you can convert into oxygen and methane, and it has a reasonable gravity level, and it has a certain amount of shielding from radiation. So Mars has the resources that we would need to be able to establish a long-term civilization. So that's, I think, the main reason we would want to go there is to establish a civilization on Mars. So we'd have basically two planets instead of one. And it has the potential to eventually be terraformed to be basically a second Earth. Kind of asking the question of why we should go to Mars is a little bit asking why should Europeans immigrate to North America 500 years ago, right? I mean, it's a little bit different because there are already people
in North America. Which is an amazing question.
Right. Well, because it created our civilization, the North American civilization, which is one of the most creative civilizations. So North America, the U.S. has developed like so many inventions of the world. Imagine the world without airplanes, which North America developed. Some bad, I guess, like nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
But there's two questions. Why anyone should leave Earth, and then why Mars?
Yeah, why are people talking about leaving Earth?
It's not that everyone should leave Earth. It's that it would make sense to establish a civilization on another planet. Part of the reason is that, you know, if something were to happen to Earth, at least we wouldn't have all our eggs in one basket. There's a quote by Robert Heinlein, who's a science fiction writer. Starship Troopers, Earth is too small and fragile a basket to leave all of our eggs in. So that's one reason. But obviously, we're hoping that, you know, Earth doesn't suffer a major catastrophe. But I think just learning how to live in a harsh environment really impacts us on Earth. So sending people to Mars benefits humanity on Earth. And I think that's one of the other reasons you would want to develop the technology to recycle your water, to produce food efficiency in small areas, local sustainable technology that keeps people alive in harsh environments. So that could be useful all over Earth today, right? So the other reason connected to that is basically it's a challenge. So going to Mars is a difficult thing within our scope of technology. It's something that we could do. And putting ourselves at the edge of technology and pushing ourselves as a civilization is what has always brought us forward. I'm actually writing a book about history of exploration, and I think that going to the edge of the horizon and looking over and constantly exploring new territories and constantly expanding into new areas and just learning about the world is the one of the things that has pushed us forward as a species. And this is a continuation of that. Right now, it's a very unique time. So humans have been around for, depending on how you measure it, millions or hundreds of thousands of years. And just now, at this time, we have the capability to leave our planet for the first time ever. In fact, in 4.5 billion years of
life, that we know of.
Right. In 4.5 billion years of life on Earth, this is the first time that any species could leave.
That we have record of.
That we have record of?
Yeah, I mean, I'm being facetious, but you know, you've got these people that are like, oh yeah, there's these super volcanoes that cover everything up every 600,000 years, and then like, who knows what's under it?
Yeah,
and,
that's an interesting question. So bones are not easily fossilized. So only 1 in a billion bones are fossilized. So like dinosaurs roamed the earth for 200 million years or something like that. And that's why we find a lot of dinosaur bones and fossils, right? But there are 7 billion people on Earth, and 206 bones in the human body. So that means there's, what, a couple thousand at most bones. If everyone died today in a million years, how many fossils would exist of us? Not that many, right? And they'd be buried all over. So the question is, would aliens digging in the future be able to find our fossilized bones? Not necessarily sure. I think one
so
of the
human,
things that would
human
last
bones
long is
don't
plastic.
Fossilize the same way as dinosaur bones? Is
no,
what
they
saying?
Do. They do. But there were way more dinosaurs. Dinosaurs lived for 200 million years.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right.
Right. That's fascinating.
So that's why
that.
We have so many dinosaur bones, because they just live so long. There's probably lots of species that existed on Earth that we have no idea about
right.
because they didn't leave evidence behind.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I never thought about that. That's why you're always finding dinosaur bones. I mean, I've never found a single dinosaur bone. I just look at them in the museums.
I used to dig in my backyard when I was a kid thinking I'd find them, but you never do.
Yeah, that's what a letdown. I hope that exploring space has been a much more fruitful experience for you than digging in your backyard for dinosaur bones.
Yeah.
So leaving Earth isn't just about pollution or the fact that we may blow ourselves up or it's also about just exploration is what you're saying.
I think that's the negative side of the coin. The positive side of the coin is that exploration pushes us forward and helps spurn our technology. See, I think people think that we develop the technology to do things and then we go and do them based on our technology. But I think it's actually the reverse. In almost every way, we decide that we want to do something and then develop the technology to do it. And like if we didn't come to North America or people didn't spread out throughout the world across oceans, we never would have developed transatlantic ocean liners and planes that could fly across people across the ocean in a single day. And that has a dramatic impact on our lives today. You know, our lives are so different just by the fact that we did move around and we created the incentives to develop technologies that allowed us to transport ourselves around the world in a day. Now we can travel anywhere in the world in a day, which is pretty remarkable, right?
Yeah.
Actually, that's another thing. So you think about technology. When is the greatest period of technological growth? Or when would you say humans were modern?
When would I say they became modern? Or when would I say was the most substantial technological growth we've seen?
Well, either. I guess I think of it sort of the same way in a sense, because after that burst of technological growth, we were modern. But you could answer it either way.
Maybe with electricity.
Electricity. Yeah, that's a good one. So electricity was discovered... Well, actually, so people have always sort of known about electricity because of amber. They would rub
thunderstorms,
furs and amber, and it would create static.
Oh.
Static electricity. But you're right, the thunderstorm, the Benjamin Franklin thing, you tied a key to a kite.
Idiot.
And had lightning come down and I guess survived.
And the guy got a dollar bill with his face on it after that.
Yeah. Yeah, a good one too. When you think about technology, I'm thinking about technological growth today. You know, we have smartphones. We didn't have those 10 or 15 years ago. We have TVs, computers. We didn't have those maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago. But I mean, I guess I look at technology as transportation because it really impacts your life. You can move around. Like you can get that information that you get on a phone or television. You could get it by reading a book, really.
Your imagination, but it's way faster on your phone.
It is, okay. There may be other problems with smartphones, you know, the way they affect your brain and things like that. But yeah, absolutely. But the ability to move around the entire planet in a day, I think that kind of is is something that defines us as modern. But even if you look back at the 1800s, before the railroad or the steam engine, people were reliant on humans or beasts like oxen and horses to get around, right? Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to go from New York City to California...
Forget it.
Yeah, it would take you months and you'd probably die along the way.
Let's hitch up the Buffalo.
Or Oregon Trail, right? It's that video game Oregon Trail. But as soon as you have the Transcontinental Railroad, you can get across in a few days.
Maybe we became modern the moment we started depending on machines daily.
I think that's probably true. Absolutely. And the machines take the form of railroad, steamship to mm-hmm. get around Earth, and also telegraph for communications.
Yeah.
So as soon as you have the telegraph line, you can send electrical signals along a cable and transmit a message to someone within a matter of hours, maybe. You know, they have relay stations, so it wasn't instantaneous, but you could transmit a message around the world in days, hours to days. So that, I think, is definitely a definition of modern.
So the rush to Mars is kind of like the ultimate problem-solving challenge for humans. Like, I think humans are problem solvers. I think that's what evolution is. Like, we just constantly solve problems and we're growing and getting smarter and stronger every day. And in the age of technology, where all of the growth that we're seeing is technological, because that's just the frontier right now.
I think that's right. We create a frontier and it then creates problems to solve, which gives us solutions. And often the solutions are for things we didn't even expect. So so many technological inventions come about by accident. So you're not even looking for that thing. So just forcing ourselves to solve problems necessarily drives technology forward. You know, penicillin, it had one of the greatest impacts on human civilization. Our modern medicine system has reduced mortality by, 100-fold. So people used to die as infants all the time. And nowadays we have a lifespan of 70 years, something like that. Before it would have been 35. And it's not actually because there were actually old people, you know, 200 or 300 years ago, but so many people died very young that it really skewed the statistic much lower. And it's just really modern medicine that allows people to survive and live healthy, prosperous lives. And a lot of that came about by accident, really. Like, penicillin was discovered by accident because scientists, what's his name?
Was his name penicillin?
No, his name was not penicillin. I can't remember.
First name penicillin.
No. Fleming. Alexander Fleming left some fungus on a petri dish. He basically, because his lab was dirty, so he left some fungus on a petri dish and discovered penicillin.
That sounds pretty dirty.
The bacteria.
This is kind of a rabbit trail from Mars, but you were talking about how medicine has, you know, increased life expectancy. And just before that, we were talking about how there's more people on the planet than ever. There's 7 billion people, and it's almost like, you know, a lot of people say that some of our biggest problems on planet Earth are just how many people there are. So in some ways, like, maybe you could say that some of these breakthroughs are causing problems, maybe?
Well, that's true. Yeah, Thomas Malthus in the 1800s had this idea that since fruit production grows...
it's like science won't let us die.
Right. Well, so basically human population growth is exponential, whereas food production is geometric. So... basically, you're always going to have more people than you can feed. And so people will die because they starve. Basically, you're going to constantly have these cycles of people starving, and that's human misery, which is what life is all about. So it's pretty dismal
nice,
stuff.
Nice, lighthearted stuff to start your day, folks.
Exactly. but that's never really borne out, because our technology has always been able to keep up. And actually, today we have greater food surpluses than we've ever had.
Right.
Where we produce way too much food to feed everyone. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the reasons why technology is really important, and why I think I'm kind of a technocrat. I think technology will bring solutions to problems. Like, even, you know, climate change and things like that, there's technological solutions to them, both by avoiding it in the first place with solar power. Like, California, for the first time ever, produced more solar power than it used in electricity. During peak daylight hours. For the first time in history, the entire state has produced more solar power than it used.
Was it on that day when they told everybody to not use their air conditioner?
I don't think so. No, that would have been gaming the system.
Tasteless joke. So going to Mars is an adventure. It's like the ultimate problem to solve. It's like the next frontier.
It's like exercise for your civilization. So you exercise your body to increase its strength. I think it's kind of like exercise. through civilization.
So how likely is it in your mind that we will have to leave Earth, like that it will not be an option?
Right. So again, the prospect of sending 7 billion people into space is not a realistic one in any sense. I think it's more like in a couple hundred years, it's not going to be just Earth and Mars. It's probably going to be a whole solar system full of people. And we're not going to just have 7 billion, but we're probably going to have 70 billion people.
On Earth?
No, around the solar system. So people will live on many worlds in the solar system and probably space stations as well. Absolutely, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So, and the idea is that it will improve life on Earth because a lot of heavy industry maybe will move off Earth. Earth will be kind of a more pristine environment that we don't do the polluting things that we need to do. We maybe take them off Earth because we can do them in space without harming anything.
Wow.
Right, so that's another reason to go to space. Actually, yeah, I always think about, this is way a tangent. I was thinking about the Terminator movies, right?
It's so, not that much of a tangent.
So in the Terminator movies, the robots, they don't need air. They don't need life support. Hmm. So like one of the challenging things about sending people to space is they need to breathe, right? And they need
it's kind of important.
They need to be kept at the right temperature. It actually is quite a challenge just to send people to space. But robots is pretty easy, right? So in the Terminator movies, these robots can fly, apparently without wings sometimes. I think they have some kind of anti-gravity technologies or something like that. It's fiction, I guess. But wouldn't they be going around the solar system collecting rare materials? Like, they'd be mining asteroids. They even had the Terminator series with Sarah Connor Chronicles. They were getting this rare material from Africa, the Congo, I think. But they could just get that from asteroids. Because all the materials that we have on Earth were actually produced in space. And, like, originally when people got made swords out of iron, all that iron came from meteorites. All the gold we've ever mined came from meteorites. Like, So many of the precious metals that we mine on Earth really are just the leftover bits, scraps from asteroids that have crashed into Earth, right? So there are asteroids in space in our solar system that are worth, I don't even know the number, gazillions of dollars. That's probably not a number, but there are asteroids in space that are worth more than the entire economy of Earth because they're just solid precious metals. Like platinum and stuff like that. There's a number of asteroids that are just like solid iron nickel. A relatively small asteroid contains more iron and nickel than we mine in the entire Earth in an entire year.
So maybe when we get to space and it's like comfortable going around, like, I mean, we've already been to space, but once we're like colonizing other planets and stuff, if we're running into these giant asteroids and we're harvesting tons of platinum and gold and stuff, maybe they become less valuable.
Well, that's true. Yeah. I mean, what value is gold other than it's a pretty good conductor? It's used in some electronic components, but...
And it's currently finite.
Right. Exactly. Its whole basis of value is based on its limited supply. Absolutely. 100%. Which is Bitcoin too, by the way. It's
limited
supply, right?
So maybe Bitcoin is more valuable because it's like just hardwired. There's only so much Bitcoin.
Well, that is why it is actually valuable. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the fundamental basis of a money system is it has to be difficult to produce. That's another reason to develop civilization off Earth is because there are tons of really valuable materials. And one of the things that's interesting about Earth is Earth has a lot of gravity. It's a pretty big planet for a rocky planet. It's really difficult to get off. It's actually kind of amazing that getting off Earth in a rocket is just at the bare limit of our technology, right? If Earth had a little more gravity, we couldn't do it at all. We could never leave. If Earth had a lot less gravity, like the moon, it'd be super easy to build a rocket that can get to space, right? So Earth is a very interesting place because it kind of teases us. We can get off it, but it's really tough, right? But once
does
we have...
Does that mean, I don't want to interrupt, but does that logic mean that planets that have more gravity than Earth are uninhabitable?
Well, they're not necessarily uninhabitable, but they might be really difficult for whatever civilization
once
they
you're
might
there,
support.
You're there. You can't leave.
To get off. So this is one of, you know, the NASA discovered those TRAPPIST planets, TRAPPIST star system with at least three habitable planets. The planets were really close to each other, so closer than Earth and the moon, so you'd be able to see the other planets really well. Like Mars to us looks like a star, basically.
Right.
But those planets would be bigger in the sky than the moon is to us. So it would look like another planet. You could see, hey, look over there. I can see there's another habitable planet with
oceans and stuff. I can see my house from here.
Yeah, pretty much, right? Wouldn't that be like amazing if you could see other habitable planets?
Yeah.
And those planets have a lot less gravity, so they'd be really easy to build rockets to get off of. So if there's any civilizations on the Trappist in the Trappist star system, those guys are definitely starfarers. Like, they could build rockets really easily, get off other planets. They could go visit the planet next door, which is also habitable, and then that would drive their technology to be able to travel beyond to other planets and other star systems. So,
wow.
Yeah, Earth is kind of a really unique place in that it's really tough. And that's actually another reason why it'd be good to have branches of civilization off Earth, because once you're off, you don't want to return, because it's actually really easy to go between the moon and Mars, or to go from an asteroid to another asteroid. You could jump from an asteroid to another asteroid with your feet. You don't need a spaceship.
I guess that makes sense, yeah. Because there's no atmosphere.
Right. Very little gravity.
Yeah.
So it depends on the side of the asteroid and how close they are and stuff like that. You're not going to want to jump millions of miles through space. But, you know, you'd have to be careful not to leave an asteroid with your feet.
Don't do it on accident.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You make one mistake and you're just floating forever.
Yeah.
So that'd be an awkward walk to school. But
float to school. By your school.
So anyway, because Earth has high gravity, but other places in our solar system don't, once we have a civilization established, it becomes easier to sustain itself, and you have this interplanetary commerce that transports goods between worlds that never go to Earth. Earth is like a no-fly zone, basically, mm-hmm. because Earth is such a heavy planet with so much gravity.
Right. So it almost seems like life would be easier on certain planets that have less gravity.
From a transportation perspective, in terms of like rockets getting around, that is definitely true. But I don't know that life is easier, because you can't breathe the air.
Right.
So.
Well, this is a perfect segue into my next question, which is, what are the most challenging aspects of living on Mars right now, or any other planet for that matter?
Well, first of all,
we'll start with Mars.
None of the other worlds, and I call them world is very inclusive. It means moon or planet or asteroid even, or whatever. So none of the other worlds in our solar system have breathable atmospheres, so you can't breathe. That's one of the main challenges. Fortunately, the technology to produce oxygen out of other gases like carbon dioxide has existed for about 150 years. So we are able to do that.
And what does that consist of? Releasing it into a controlled atmosphere, or like everybody wearing oxygen tanks?
No,
or what?
It means having it in an enclosed space, like a spaceship basically, or like a dome or some kind of building, basically.
So people would have to live in these things, and they couldn't
live. That's right. So you live in a building, and you wear a spacesuit outside, at least for the first while. Mm-hmm.
And so if you do go outside, you have to go with some kind of oxygen tank.
That's right.
But technology will make these smaller and smaller and more practical, and eventually it won't be a big hassle like it is today, and maybe eventually it gets comfortable.
Well, I think that, yeah, probably. That would definitely be the goal, yeah.
Okay, so what are some of the other challenges?
Producing food. So transporting anything to Mars is, you know, difficult. So you want to produce as much as you can on site, in situ, meaning you want to get water from the ice, and you want to be able to grow plants if you can, crops, as much as you can. Of course, I think producing your own food in the very near term is going to be really challenging. So you want to send as much bulk dry food as possible just to sustain you. And, you know, you definitely experiment with growing crops kind of almost more for morale, I think, at first.
And nanotechnology will eventually solve that problem, right?
I don't know about that, but certainly like technologies like 3D printing and stuff are really important, because you'd be able to just bring some medium and you wouldn't have to figure out exactly what you need to bring, and you could just make it on site by just transmitting plans to build something. So you transmit the drawings to build something, and then you build it where you are. It's one of the reasons they have a 3D printer on the space station now, so you can just decide what you need based on the situation, and then produce the things out of the medium.
But with food.
With food,
I had heard that nanotechnology will eventually get to the place where you can like create a chicken breast without a chicken.
Oh, you're talking about like synthetic meat.
Yeah, and like we'll be able to make like a block of apple without growing it.
Right. So I'm not sure how it's quite possible. I'm not sure how nanotechnology fits into that. But certainly technologies like that would be important. I have a video cooking on Mars, which is kind of a joke, because it's really difficult to send meat. Like, animal. Imagine trying to send an animal, like a cow or something, in a spaceship to Mars.
The meat industry in America was bad.
Yeah. Cows drink swimming pools of water. They create dumpsters of waste.
We're going to take a break to talk about the people who made this episode possible. I'm talking about Golda Green Tea. It just so happens the owners of this company are dear, dear friends of mine. We were neighbors in Venice. In fact, Sugu Wada, one of the owners, made a cameo in an old video of mine called Oh Jeffrey, where he kicks my cousin out of his Airstream trailer. Green tea is water-soluble, which means, unlike coffee, you can drink it to your heart's content without getting anxious or jittery. Don't be fooled by organic labels. Most green tea contains high levels of pesticides. Golda's sencha leaves, however, are cultivated from the finest soil in Japan, 100% organic and pesticide-free since 1998. Hand-harvested by humans means the leaves aren't chopped by aggressive machines, which means less oxidation and more nutrients in your cup. This is the best green tea I've ever had in my life, and I would be saying that regardless of my friendship with Sugu and Keiko. Whenever I drink their tea, I feel so good. Get free shipping on all orders until the end of April by visiting studioqla.com and using promo code SPELLBOUND at checkout. That's studioqla.com using promo code SPELLBOUND at checkout. So what are some of the other challenges associated with living on Mars?
So building things, like building structures. So anything that involves transportation of bulk materials, which is food, which is water, which is air, which is like building materials, right? So how do you build a structure on Mars? One way is plastics. You can actually make plastics out of the materials on Mars, carbon dioxide. Plastics are basically hydrocarbon chains, carbon and hydrogen. So you can manufacture plastics out of the materials, and we've known how to do that for a long time. Plastics, you can make bricks, so natural materials, bamboo, even if you grow bamboo, stuff like that, but you can make bricks out of the regolith. People have done experiments of building brick houses out of the types of, it's called regolith soil, basically. It's not soil because it doesn't have any nutritional component.
Okay.
And it's not called earth either because it's not earth. So technically the ground on Mars should be called Mars.
Right? Interesting.
But we call it regolith. That's like the surface.
And unearthing something on Mars would be unmarsing.
Exactly. Well, right. So a geologist, geo studies earth, right? So it would be an areologist.
Oh, wow.
Right.
Fascinating.
Because Aries all kinds of things change. Greek word for Mars.
Yeah. The odds are stacked against this this incentive towards Mars.
Right. So basically, the dirt on Mars is called regolith, and you could build bricks out of it to build houses and stuff like that. So basically, construction materials, or you could use like caves. There's caves, lava flow caves, stuff like that that have radiation protection. So that's another challenge. Mars, the radiation protection on the planet is less. That a lot less than Earth, actually, from cosmic rays. So it does a reasonable job.
Because there's less atmosphere?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's easier to leave Mars.
Also magnetic field.
So it's easier to leave Mars than it is to leave Earth, right?
Yeah, so that's mostly because of gravity. So atmosphere definitely does play a role in rockets taking off on Earth and Mars. But the main thing is gravity. It's a matter of building up enough velocity to stay in orbit of something with that much gravity. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a lot easier to leave Mars. Absolutely. And that's what I was saying earlier. If you have civilization spread on different worlds, it's easier to travel between two other worlds in our solar system than it is to go back to Earth or to travel from Earth to those worlds. So once you have, like, more than one place established, you can travel between them relatively easily. So that's why you see, like, spaceships going between planets, and they don't even need to deal with an atmosphere, maybe, because they're just, like, an inter-asteroid spaceship or something like that, or a spaceship that goes from the moon to an asteroid. It just needs to land without worrying about the atmosphere.
So we've got to come up with ways to breathe. Like, oxygen is a problem. Food is going to be a problem. Shelter is going to be a problem. But we have solutions for all of these things.
Right. It's like Maslow's pyramid, the way you're saying it, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, the pyramid of needs?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Food and shelter, psychological well-being.
Well, it makes sense that that's where we would start the conversation about what, you know, those would be the first things we'd have to figure out.
Yeah, absolutely. You need to survive.
Is there anything else, or is that basically the primary challenges? Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good start because, as you know, that those are the requirements for survival.
What about having like babies and stuff on other planets? Is there anything weird about anything different about having babies?
So that's a good question. We don't really know for sure, but.
So we spend billions of dollars getting there and then we can't have kids.
Well, no, I mean, so I think they've done some experiments with animals on the space station. I'm not actually sure how conclusive they are, but that's a very different thing.
Interesting.
So basically the question comes down to mostly gravity. So on the space station, you actually don't have zero gravity. Gravity cancels out from the orbit. So this is another misconception about space. People think there's no gravity in space, but there is. Actually, space has 90% as much gravity on Earth. But the thing is, the orbital trajectory cancels out the gravity pull down. So people are floating around weightless.
The orbital trajectory, are you talking about like the path that the planets are making or creating some kind of air current or something?
Yeah, I'm talking about the space station, really. So the space station's constantly in free fall of Earth, but it's going around in a circle because it's moving to the side. That's what an orbit is.
Right.
It's free fall towards the center, but it's moving to the side so fast that it never hits the center.
I forgot we were talking about the space station.
So because you're falling, you're in free fall, and it feels like there's no gravity. It's as if there's no gravity. So I do a lot of tangents, I've noticed.
Hey, you know.
This is like my book, too. It has a lot of tangents.
But, you know too much. You're like, oh, and then there's this thing.
Oh, I just want to say this cool thing, really cool thing.
Yeah. Well, that's why I like talking to you, because it's like you never know what we're going to talk about.
So we're talking about babies.
Procreation.
So Mars has 38% as much gravity
as
Earth.
Could you even have sex if there's less gravity?
It's hard, actually, in space.
It's hard. It's enjoyable.
It's hard to achieve docking and maintain docking.
Interesting. Yeah. Docking, what a term.
Yeah. And you also have free-floating fluids.
Free-floating fluids? That's like the triple F.
Yeah. Those are some of the dangers of sex in space.
Yikes.
Actually, we don't know whether anyone has had sex in space. We suspect the answer is yes, though. But we don't know for sure.
Yeah. It has to have happened.
I think probably yes. There's been several opportunities, let's say.
Yeah.
So babies. 38% gravity. We don't know for sure what effect that would have, but I think it's hard to argue that it would prevent, you know, proper implantation of a fetus, proper development of a fetus, stuff like that.
Muscle development would probably...
Right. So people are going to be weaker, right? But that's an adaptation rather than something fundamental in your biology. So there's two kind of driving things that make you the way you are. There's your DNA and your basically instructions for how you'd build. And then also your environment, like what the gravity level is. So you're going to be weaker on Mars. You might be a bit taller, but not fundamentally like very much taller, because your DNA instructions are going to tell your body how to build you. But
so
you
that
might
means
be
you and I already look
gravity,
like we,
right?
You and I look like we were born on Mars then, because we're tall and skinny.
Yeah, maybe. you certainly.
We look like Martians.
Quite possibly, yes.
So that would mean, in terms of interplanetary travel, people who lived on Mars or places with less gravity would have a really difficult time coming to Earth.
Well, that's true. So I don't know if you've seen The Expanse. That's a really good sci-fi show. Uh-huh. I highly recommend this show called The Expanse.
Okay.
And it is, I think, the most realistic sci-fi show I've seen. And it's basically our solar system in about 200-300 years, maybe. It's got Martians, like humans from Earth who went to Mars. It's got the Belters, so people who live in the belt, and they're tall, and they have like thin bones, and it's hard for them to come to Earth because they grew up in really low gravity.
So that's a real thing.
It's a form of torture, is actually just exposing them to Earth gravity.
It feels like torture.
Yeah. Oh, it's a lot of weight. I mean, the amount of gravity on us is actually quite severe. If you drop something, it's going to hit the ground hard. Like it's kind of amazing if you think about it, that if you fall off like 10 feet, you could die.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, probably not at 10 feet, but if you fall into spikes or,
yeah,
you know, if you fall into like something, a really hard surface in the wrong way on your head, you're probably going to die because gravity's so intense. The other thing is 14.7 pounds per square inch of atmosphere on us all the time. That's kind of remarkable. Just like this tiny section of your skin, there's 15 pounds pushing on every tiny little section of your skin all the time. And it's just because there's a column of air above you up to the atmosphere.
So will life on Mars ever really be comfortable?
Yeah, I don't know what you mean necessarily, but comfortable. I think the long-term goal is to have a civilization, which means that you have pretty much all the amenities you have on Earth. So the first people who go would probably be sort of pioneers, and I don't know if
not very comfortable, probably.
Right, like, is it comfortable to go to the space station?
Probably not, is my guess. I've never been.
I don't know. I don't think it's particularly uncomfortable. Actually, this is an interesting thing. So I always think about, you know, throughout history, what are the worst jobs you could do? And going to space or going to Mars is certainly not one of them, I think. I think maybe one of the worst jobs is, like, obviously fighting in a war. So if you think about, like, U-boat crews in World War II, German U-boat crews, their mortality rate was, I think, about 75%. So you had about a 75% chance of dying. You were basically underwater much of the time, like almost all the time. Even just the officers really went above deck. So if you would go out to sea for like 2 months, and almost the whole time you'd be in a sardine can underwater, like a submarine that smells terrible. The air is horrible. You're cramped all the time. It's sweaty and hot. Have you seen Das Boot, the movie? It's like, you know, horrible conditions, right? And mm-hmm. you have a 75% chance of dying.
So it'll be better
and
than
you're
this.
Getting death charged and people are like dropping explosions on you and stuff like that, right? So the question is it going to be uncomfortable at first? Probably a little bit, yeah. But
maybe it'll be easier in terms of like strength as Earthlings. Like we'll have much more strength initially than we need on Mars because there's less gravity, like you were saying. So,
well,
like,
yeah, that's another thing. People are worried about going to space and the impact it has on your body. But if you're going to Mars, a place with 38% gravity,
maybe you can run faster.
You absolutely can. In
really?
Fact, yeah, Mars is the most efficient place for human locomotion. This is
really?
The research I specifically
human
did.
Locomotion.
We put people on treadmills that were partially suspended, so basically moon gravity and Mars gravity, and had them run, and they breathe into an apparatus, VO2 max is called. You've probably seen them on like Olympians and stuff training.
Okay.
Measures their carbon dioxide, measures how much energy they're using. So turns out Mars is the most efficient place to run.
Really?
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense in a way because Earth has so much gravity, so it pulls us down so much, and mm-hmm. we have to push against it a lot, and it kind of sucks us down more than it should. But the moon has too little gravity, and you kind of float too far.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that you use more energy exactly, but it's really hard to move fast on the moon because you kind of jump up in the air every time. And you have to, so running and walking is based on pushing against the surface. You have to have something to push against or you can't walk or run.
Right.
And you don't come down enough. You float too much on the moon. So you don't come down enough to push back, you know? So walking on the moon is really tough. In fact, you basically end up doing little bunny hops. If you look at the astronauts on the moon, they kind of just hop, 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 mm-hmm. hop with their legs apart, really.
But it looks so cute.
Bunny hop. It's called loping. Yeah.
Loping.
Loping motion. It's like half skipping. It's like skipping without swinging your legs. That's what loping is.
It's like what I make my character do when I'm playing Call of Duty to get around faster.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Just like jump everywhere.
Yeah. So Mars is the Goldilocks of locomotion. It's just right.
So it will get more comfortable over time. We'll figure out how to adapt and how to make life more comfortable there. Is there something to say for what were you going to say?
Is the Starship Enterprise uncomfortable?
I don't know. I've never been on Starship Enterprise.
You've never seen Star Trek?
That's a TV show.
Well, I mean, do they ever go outside? So in the Starship Enterprise, I guess they, some of them, but
you're
only,
saying they thought through this?
Only
is
a
what
few
you're
people, Ensign Ricky, like the captain, Ensign Ricky, maybe the first officer, although the captain's not supposed to go. That's one of the rules and new regulations in the next generation.
But if you're on the planet killed. Already, I mean, I'm not talking about being in space. I'm saying like you're on Mars.
Yeah.
Will it ever get to be as like comfortable as life on Earth?
Living on Mars in the near term is going to be a lot of indoor living, mm-hmm, really, mm-hmm. right? And that's what I'm trying to compare it to. Starship Enterprise is an awesome place to live, especially the new one, the next gen version. You go to 10-4, they got a cool bar. I guess they have holodecks too, but you know, you have really nice quarters. It's really spacious. You have indoor greenhouses. You have arboretums. You can walk around and see lots of nature. You almost don't know you're inside.
It sounds like what it's probably like to live in Dubai.
Yeah, kind of, like, or Texas. Texas in the summer, right? Texas, does anyone go outside in Texas in the summer? Or
yeah.
Florida. I go to Florida a lot and it's freaking hot and freaking humid. When I'm in Florida, I go straight from inside to straight to the car, AC, crank up the AC, then run straight inside, right?
That's the only comparison I've ever heard between Texas and Dubai. You might get shot for that comparison.
Oh, the climate's similar. Can't
yeah,
argue
I guess
that
that's
the climate's
true.
Not
that's true, yeah. Yeah, but when you're describing Starship Enterprise, it sounds a lot like what Dubai seems like, but I don't really think Texas when I think Starship Enterprise.
What I'm talking about is luxurious indoor living. Yeah,
what I'm saying is that indoor spaces
doesn't have to be terrible,
right?
Basically.
Do you think it'll ever become seamless for us? Like, we'll ever be able to just go outside on Mars like we do on Earth, where it's just like, oh yeah, let's go outside.
Yeah. That's the ultimate goal, for sure.
You don't think it's impossible?
I don't think it's impossible. I don't know what the time frame is, but I would say that, okay, so right now we have ideas for how we could turn Mars into a planet where you could go outside. Mm-hmm. They could take hundreds, could take thousands of years. Ultimately, it's kind of an infrastructure question. It's not a science question. It's more an engineering question. It's how much resources do you put into doing this? Could we do it? Yeah, of course. Could we build the Death Star? Probably. But how much would a Death Star cost? Trillions, like more than trillions of dollars. Like,
and how much value does it add?
Well, yeah, not a whole lot.
Not a whole lot. Unless you really love Star Wars.
I think a Death Star would be probably more than the economy of the entire planet, right? Mm-hmm. So could it be done? Sure. You know, how long would it take? It depends how fast we work.
Yeah.
Depends if Darth Vader is visiting.
All right, last point of conversation. Is there anything to say about us potentially like our immune system suffering, or like you said, we could possibly get weaker on Mars. So like, could that potentially affect our immune system and make us weaker in that sense?
They have done studies on space station on immune systems. And I think maybe they do suffer some effects. The question is, like, for most adaptations that we go through in space, they're actually acclimatization to the environment. I mean, certain things like the reduced muscle mass and bone mass is because you're not using them. You don't need them. Mm-hmm. It's like you're not doing exercise, basically, and you don't have the gravity to push against. So it's kind of your body adapting in many ways. Some aren't, like radiation. The immune system thing possibly is not. But the other thing is, if you're in an enclosed environment on Mars, you're not going to be exposed to diseases. You probably won't need your immune system as much, because who are you getting them from? Like, unless there's a lot, maybe if there's visitors from Earth or something like that, like a new crew or something like that. But basically,
also airports are pretty dirty. That's an enclosed space.
Well, that's because there's a lot of people coming through.
But that's
because there's so many people. The viruses and the bacteria come from people.
But if there's going to be people in these enclosed spaces.
Yeah, but if it's the same people all the time, there's no new people. You've already been exposed to all the germs.
Well, what about daycares?
Well,
daycare.
If we're talking
notorious
about like giant cities on Mars and stuff like that, with like thousands of people that you're not exposed to, then that's fine. But if I'm talking about like 50 to 100 people,
you're talking about a huge enclosed city.
Yeah, well, small. I'm actually talking about something smaller than a city where you've been exposed to all the germs and viruses that there are, the bacteria and viruses that there are in that space, right?
I see.
So
you're gonna get vaccinated or something.
Well, you're definitely gonna get vaccinated, but also there aren't going to be germs that you haven't been exposed to.
Okay.
Germs don't arise from nowhere, right? Virus or bacteria transfers from a host to another host. Often on your hands, like you can pick it up from surfaces, of course, like a doorknob or a handshake or something like that. But if it came from someone, mm-hmm. they don't just appear in nature spontaneously and then infect us.
Right.
So you're not going to be exposed to viruses and bacteria unless there's someone there that's carrying them. And if there's someone there that's carrying you with them, you've lived with them already for months and months, you've probably already been exposed.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Good point.
So you're probably immune to everything that there is.
That's a good point. So we're not going to get sicker.
Well, sicker in certain ways. Sicker in terms of pathogens like bacteria and viruses, probably not. Sicker in terms of like muscle decay, I guess people could call that sicker, right? But
yeah, maybe mentally sick.
Well, that's another question.
We'll have to figure that out once we get there. Well, Andrew, thanks so much for coming back on the show. It's always great having you. Always an interesting conversation. I want to plug your socials. You can follow Andrew at Mars Raider, R-A-D-E-R, Mars Raider, on Twitter. And do you want to plug any of your books or anything like that, or any of your board games? Which one would be appropriate for
Rocket this Science? I have a kid's book, Rocket Science. It's about how rockets and spaceships work.
Yeah, if you've got kids ages like 4 to 9, right, is the age range?
Yeah, it's like that one's like 6 to 10. I also have books for younger kids, Epic Space Adventure and Mars Rover Rescue.
And they're awesome. I have these books. My kids love them. They're great books. So if you have kids or you know people that have kids, which you definitely do, you should check out those books. They were a huge success on Kickstarter too, right?
Yep.
So congratulations.
Thank you very much.
It's always good to see you.
Yeah, great to talk with you, Julian. Good conversation.
Would you like to live on Mars? Are you one of these people that thinks we're never actually going to make it to Mars? No matter what you think, I want to hear your thoughts. The whole point of this podcast is open-minded conversation. And so engage with the other listeners, especially if you're watching on YouTube. That's a great place to involve yourself in the conversation. Be sure to subscribe so you never miss an episode. That way your phone will always stay up to date. If you want to send me something longer, you can shoot me an email, hello@spellboundshow.com. I'm Julian Smith. This has been Spellbound. I hope you're enjoying it as much as I am, and I look forward to seeing you guys next Monday. Make it a great week.